afternoon and welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources for Tuesday, April 16th. And as you know, we're having an additional hearing today because the deadline is coming up and we want to make sure and hear all the bills that we had on the agenda that were signed up. So I want to make an announcement first that a work session for Senate Bill 839 will be held over till tomorrow because we still don't have the paperwork for that. And so tomorrow is going to be a busy day. And we will make sure our committee is on time, and we'll be starting right away on that. So we're going to hear Senate Bill 217 first, and then Senate Bill 846. With that, we'll go ahead and open up the public hearing on Senate Bill 217. Beth?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members, Senate Bill 217 imposes an annual management fee on water rights. There's a dash one amendment in your packets on OLIS and in the back of the room that replaces the measure and imposes an annual water management fee of $100 on each primary and each supplemental water right held for waters of state under water right permit, water right certificate, decree, or groundwater registration. Declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Thank you, Beth. We have the department up, since this is a department bill, and the governor's office, I think, wants to come up. Right, we'll have Senator Thompson up after the introduction. Is that okay?
Senator? That is...
Okay.
Well, when on the list once we
okay.
got it
when
out
in
public
it?
That day. What was drafted 3-4?
You guys are so far away.
So
this is the Ways and Means. We're not normally in this room, so it's a little bit unnerving here. I feel like everybody's just as far away from us as possible, which I'm sure is part of the plan. Okay, gentlemen, thank you.
Madam Chair, for the record, Phil Ward with the Water Resources Department. I think I've been delegated to kick this off today, and then Mr. Whitman's going to follow me with some comments. But with your permission, Madam Chair and members, I'll just get started. So this is testimony on Senate Bill 217, as you heard from staff, the annual water right management fee proposal. And wanted to talk a little bit with y'all about how we got where we are today. This bill started with the concern of the Oregon Water Resources Commission about declining resources available for the Water Resources Department. They had seen the budget struggles that the agency had gone through in recent years. Seen the impact on the agency's ability to effectively manage the resource in their view, and they began to look for ways to develop a more stable revenue source for the agency. One that was, as you know, this agency is largely dependent on general fund for its funding, and thereby subject to the challenges associated with that. So they began a process actually clear back in 2010 to find ways to stabilize funding for the agency. So how did Senate Bill 217 actually come about? The Water Resources Department appointed a subcommittee to work this issue, and that subcommittee was chaired by John Roberts, who's a member of our commission. They met with everyone they could find in terms of stakeholder organizations to interview them on how we address this funding, the funding challenges facing the agency. They developed an extensive list of funding options, about 28 of them at one point. And they evaluated those options based on the following principles. They wanted to make sure that folks who actually used the services of the agency helped support that. They wanted fees that could be structured as equitably as possible. Wanted to ensure that those fees were used for the purpose for which they were collected, and that you had and that you could actually logistically collect those fees. So those were four principles that they used to guide their deliberations. This slide, I think, is one that is fairly telling in terms of the fiscal challenges, the resource challenges that the state's Water Resources Department has faced in recent years. So you can see the high water mark for employees, FTE, for the Water Resources Department was actually in the 1997-99 biennium in terms of state-funded FTE. Since there, we've been on a fairly steady decline with that one bump up in 2007. But the thing that adds, that makes that this graph even more serious, is the piece at the bottom there. In the 1990s, 160 state-funded staff. We're down 144 today. But the piece next in that sentence, we had 40 county-funded staff at that time, and we're down to about 15 today. One of the notable exceptions in terms of maintaining county support for the Water Resources Department has been Senator Hansel's district. Umatilla County continues to be a significant funder of assistant water masters. Most of these county-funded staff were what we call assistant water masters. They worked under the direction of the Water Resources Department state staff. So the result of our commission's deliberations, or excuse me, of this reduced FTE level, essentially, we've had a less efficient distribution of water to those folks who have the right to use it. We've been slower in our response in the field to calls for water and to dispute resolution. We've had a processing backlog because we've had a bit of a bottleneck in terms of data development relative to water right processing, particularly in the groundwater area. And lastly, less ability to develop the scientific data for decision making. So these are the kind of things that our commission was extremely concerned about as they deliberated on this issue. The Water Resources Commission, again in their deliberations, looked at models from other states. So they looked. So Alaska has a flat annual water right fee. Iowa has a $95 annual fee for water right permits. Wisconsin has an annual water right fee. As an old egg guy, I might ask you what breed of cow that is, Senator, but that's a Guernsey. Fawn and white generally will mean a Guernsey cow. Models from other states. California. This is a fee that was is very similar to the one that our commission has put forward. This was established in 2003 and 4. It was actually stayed as a result of court action, but as of 2011, this fee is online. It's $150 a right or 5 cents per acre foot of water used. Minnesota has a minimum fee with a per gallon fee. Per gallon amount on top of that, and Oklahoma has a small annual water rate fee as well. So after reviewing all this material, again, this was a Water Resources Commission led and driven effort. They came to several conclusions. They directed the staff to work with the governor's office and the legislature to develop legislation effectuate a water right management fee, and that resulted in the bill you have before you today, Senate Bill 217. So this bill in its originally drafted form, an annual water right fee charged to water right holders, $100 per right with a cap of $1,000 for all but municipal water providers. So again, in its original printed form, this bill had a $1,000 cap. For example, on agricultural users, they wouldn't get higher than 1,000. Municipal water providers were not included in that cap. We had a stakeholder work group that subsequent to the commission kind of laying out the ground rules on what they wanted, that met to see if we could come to further agreement on what a fee bill should look like, and they met in 2012, 2013, fairly regularly, right up to the beginning of the session, to see if we could further lay out some parameters regarding those three things there, and some amendments that I'll talk about in just a moment came out of that. It was interesting because in this group of stakeholders that met, there was not universal support for this concept, as you can imagine. But the folks in good faith, when we asked the question, if a bill were to pass, what would you like it to look like? They responded and gave us, all of them, whether they supported the concept or not, gave us what I thought were meaningful suggestions, and we appreciated that very much. So what would this fee support if it were enacted? Well, the first biennium, it would really, the fiscal impact that you have before you on this bill identifies the first biennium as a startup time period where we would raise, our estimate is, we would raise about as much money as we needed to do that first biennium implementation of this legislation. So a program like this is going to have some significant startup. Our water right records would have to be trued up significantly in terms of what's in place today. And so the first biennium would be spent doing that, putting the IT and billing systems together. And we do anticipate some service delivery enhancement as a result just of the truing up that we would be doing in the water rights system. Subsequent biennia, stable long-term source of revenue and significant enhancement of service delivery in our view. And I'll talk more specifically about that in just a moment. There it is. Just quickly, so this would provide the ability for the department to develop the data necessary for timely and accurate decision making, water right decisions, as the water resource has become more constrained here in our state. This is particularly critical that we make our decisions on the best data available. This would give us a more timely field presence to address some of the issues I talked about earlier, and it would allow us to resolve situations more at the local level than when we had that adequate presence out in the field. So there have been some amendments prepared that you could consider should you wish to move this bill forward. The first is a $2,500 cap for municipal water supply. Water providers. You'll recollect that in the bill as printed, there was no cap for this type of water user. This has been suggested as a more equitable solution that we provide some kind of cap for municipal providers. It would expressly, the Dash 1 amendments that have been drafted would expressly clarify that the fee would not apply to exempt use wells. And this has been an issue of some interest in this building. We wanted to make sure that that was expressly clarified, that the fee would not apply to exempt use wells, and it would clarify what happens in the event of non-payment. A key piece of that equation is that non-payment would not affect water use. It would simply be a matter of working through the administrative processes to collect fees that were owed. So a couple slides on in conclusion. Again, our commission, who were the drivers, the initiators, and really the workers in this effort for most of the process, concluded that an annual water right management fee was, in their view, reasonably equitable and practical in terms of stabilizing and improving the services delivered by the Water Resources Department. And they directed us to pursue Senate Bill 217. The other piece that I would leave you with here is just a few, again, bites on what this bill would do if it were enacted. It would put more water masters in the field. This would provide the resources that would enable the department to begin to recover some of that field force that has been lost in recent years. Again, a key piece of whether we are effectively managing the water resources is whether we have water masters in the field. This would strengthen our field presence. It would also provide the resources to do the scientific work that needs to be done to effectively manage Oregon's water resource. Better groundwater data through actually putting the staff on the ground to do the groundwater work. Increased surface water data through increased number of gauging stations and other devices of that nature. So these are some of the things that if Senate Bill 217 were enacted, could be provided to assist in the management of Oregon's water resources. So with that, Madam Chair, I would be happy to stand for questions, or I'd be happy to wait until Mr. Whitman had his opportunity.
Thank you, Director. I think we'll hear from the Governor's office, and then we'll take questions, and then we'll, I know Senator Thompson is waiting to give testimony as well, but why don't we go ahead, Richard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor Kitzhaber's Natural Resources Advisor. There's been a lot of work done in the last several years on water resources development. The Integrated Water Resources Strategy that was launched by the legislature and developed by the department in collaboration with many stakeholders that was adopted last summer. There's been substantial work in the Umatilla Basin with the Columbia River Umatilla Solutions team that has come forward with a series of collaborative recommendations for moving water resources development forward in that part of the state. And really, that's only the beginning. The issue of water resources development and water management, I believe, is really going to be the leading resource issue facing us over the next 10, 20 years. And that's because it's key to economic development in rural parts of our state, and it's also key in terms of water supply and declining snowpack because of increasing temperature. So we've got multiple reasons to really become more active in this arena. When you couple that with the fact that we have had significant decreases in the field presence for the Water Resources Department, you can see the crisis that's looming. This is a matter of property rights. When you're talking about water rights in our first-in-time, first-in-right system, that system only works if there is a field presence to make sure that those senior water rights are actually being allowed to be used in a way consistent with our property system. Taking away the field resources to carry out first-in-time, first-in-right is going to lead to the collapse of the entire property right, first-in-time system that we have throughout the West and in the state of Oregon. So funding for this activity, it's not just a matter of the department's resources. This is really a fundamental underpinning of our rural economy in the state of Oregon. And it's key that we figure out a stable funding source for this activity long term. That's why the governor supported the department coming forward with this legislation in Senate Bill 217. It's also why the governor also devoted significant increases in general fund resources for this department as well. And, you know, the governor understands that it has to be a shared burden between both general fund support for this program and other fund support for this program. But the bottom line is we need to figure out a way to provide stable funding for this. I know there's a lot of concern about this bill. I know in particular we've heard concerns about the effect of this bill on property owners who have wells in rural Oregon. You heard Mr. Ward testify to the Dash 1 amendments, which make it absolutely clear that this water right fee would not apply to exempt groundwater uses, which includes virtually all of the residential wells in rural areas of the state. So we believe we've addressed that issue. We asked this committee to consider this issue very carefully, consider the funding issue very carefully, and to consider moving this bill along to the Ways and Means Committee so they can consider the fiscal part of this. In closing, the governor does support the concept of this bill. We'd like to see the discussion continue on this issue in this body, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? Okay, Senator Olson.
Mr. Ward, on your chart up there, you showed your decrease in people that are working for you. Could you tell me the budget difference between when the chart started and when it ended?
Madam Chair, Senator, I can't right off the top of my head, but I can definitely say that the budget in the aggregate is larger than the peak time showing peak FTE level on the chart. And the reason for that is that there's a significant amount of pass-through money that has been added to the agency in that time. And so that, for example, in the governor's proposed budget this time along, there are $20 million in bonds for water development work that that are a part of our budget, but essentially do not support the staff load in the agency, but are simply pass-through funds. So while certainly we can see larger numbers in aggregate, the true measure of the agency's operational capacity is the number of full-time equivalents housed with the agency, and that, as you can see, has shown a significant decline.
How many FTEs do you have for this budget cycle?
So for this budget cycle, the current budget, I think we're right at 144.
And what is your budget for this budget cycle?
So our budget for this budget cycle is about $20 million in general fund. And then there's another, it's, I'm trying to remember with the, all the fee revenues, but it's about $20 million in general fund. And then those additional, there's additional fee revenues and the bonds that I just spoke about.
Follow up. When I just ran through the computer here and looked, you went from 0507 was 27 million, 0911 is 46, and that was a, obviously you said there's some pass through dollars, and 1113 there's $56 million. Are you just the middle of a Ponzi scheme here, or what? Your budget. It looks like from the normal person, if they were to look at that, says, well, you've just taken a $20 million increase over 09-11.
Explained it.
But you're saying that you don't get that, all that money.
Madam Chair, Senator, I am saying that there's a significant portion of that budget, and indeed that represents the increase, is largely pass-through funds.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Senator, we heard the Water Resources Department's budget already, and there is, as the director said, for $20 million in bonds to look at water supply projects. So that would not be to fund positions directly, but to pass through to local communities or folks that are looking to build water supply projects that need assistance.
I understand it. Yeah. I understand it, Chair, but what I'm trying to find out is what is your exact budget? What do you get to spend? And from that, you can predicate, do you need more money or don't you need more money? That's what I'm trying to get to. If the numbers don't tell the truth, then somebody should know what the numbers are so we can see that, yes, in fact, you do need to have this increase. Or no, you don't, because you have a steady increase throughout, and that's what I'm trying to find.
Mm-hmm. So, Madam Chair, I can provide probably before the committee's out, if you'd like it. But certainly, I just don't have that chart with me, or I'd rattle it right off. But that can be provided very quickly and easily.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you. If you can follow up, that would be
helpful. Absolutely.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And don't stray too far, because we might have some other questions for the director. Senator Thompson, thanks for your patience.
Thank you.
Senator Thompson has sat through the budget hearing as well. Okay.
Are you leaving?
Welcome. You're so far away over there.
Yeah, I am. I can see you, though.
Okay.
Thank you for having me, Senator Dinkfelder, Chair Dinkfelder, and committee. Senator Chuck Thompson, District 26. I'm just here to give my opposition to this bill. And as a user, I'm going to be one that has to pay for this. So I looked into how fair and equitable this is. And it doesn't, they mentioned fair and equitable. It isn't fair and equitable to the standpoint. My particular orchard will have to pay $700 because I have seven certificates. And they ask if we pay fees for water. My bill for irrigation is over $7,000 a year. So we already pay for the use of our water. There's an irrigation district in Hood River, a small one. There's probably 25 or 30 growers. Their irrigation district holds two water certificates. So those 20, 25 growers will only have to split the $200 fee. So it just depends on how your irrigation districts are set up will make it whether it's fair and equitable or not. And I don't think there was a lot of time put into that. I think there's 88,000 water certificates or that will fall under this bill. So multiply 100 times 88,000. You come up is, I think that's 8 million. So when they say this won't be, this won't generate very much much revenue, I don't know what they're talking about. That's a pretty good chunk of change. And if they do, if the Amendment 1 doesn't hold true and there is some language in there that they could go after wells too, that I've heard that number could go as high as $20 million. I can't verify that, but...
Senator, we do... I didn't hear... what I heard is what we have, which is the revenue impact that two...
Well, multiply 80,000 times $100.
No, it has $2 million, just for the record, the revenue impact for this biennium, which I would think is just half the biennium, is $2 million, but for the future biennium, it is $8 to $10 million.
Yeah, yeah. So, and I don't, I mean, they're going to, once it's passed, they're going to charge us for. So it's not fair and equitable. I sit on the budget for that. Their employee costs are at 9% this year. I asked the chair, director exactly when he came into my office, what am I going to get if this is a fee and not a tax? What am I going to get for my fees? And he said, well, Senator, this will go to administrative costs because they got to fund the agency. So it's not really... like a normal fee is where you pay for a use, you get something in return. And also, it's kind of a priority. We've lost our water masters over the years. We have several water masters, but Senator Olson asked how many employees they have. Hundreds, over 100 employees, or I'm not sure exactly what he said, but they could make that distinction and put more water masters in the field if that's their choice. So anyway, thanks for having me today. And I'll let you get on with the meeting.
Great. Thank you, Senator Thompson. I know you have to get back to your committee. Thank you. Okay, we're going to start calling up folks. We have a couple of folks that came from over 100 miles away, so I'm going to call them up first. Blaine Nofsinger, am I getting that name right? David Baker, and then Barry, you wanted to come up with them? Yeah. Barry Fisher. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for coming here today.
Thank you. Thank you very much. All right. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I do appreciate your time. My name is Blaine Nofsinger. I'm a farmer from Christmas Valley, Oregon. And, I'm fourth-generation farmer right now. Both my grandparents and great-grandparents and then my father were grass seed producers in the Willamette Valley, Lebanon, Albany area. And then, Dad moved to Christmas Valley when I was very, very little, so I didn't have a choice in that. But, there now. Came here today because this, when I heard this was coming down the pike, was just worried. It's one more expense to add on to what we do. Our prices are going up on everything that we have to pay for. Every time we go to the parts house, the prices have increased. And a few years ago, electricity went up by 30%. Hasn't come down since, and that's just our new normal. With that kind of increase, what we do have to pay for our water bill, that not actually a water bill, but our pumping fee, since we're all deep wells. Last year we paid over $50,000 to pump water to our fields. So it is very excessive. We're in a desert. There is very, very, very little that would grow there if we didn't have water. So it's the lifeblood of our operation. I am afraid of just one more bill. At this time, it doesn't look very, very large, but it is one more bill.
And is this your testimony that was just handed out?
Okay, yes.
Great. Thank you, because you have some written comments in here.
Yes.
Very helpful.
Have a picture of my kids there on the first page, hoping that this is something that, like my dad has helped get me started farming, that this would be something I would be able to pass on to them. But like I said, if water was was seen as an income source by the water department here, or the water resources, that will make us suffer. It will cause a big impact. So, anyways.
Well, thank you for coming here to share your testimony today. Why don't we go ahead and hear the rest of the testimony and then see if there's any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. I also have written testimony. I'd just kind of like to run through, give us our story. My name is David Baker. I am a first-generation farmer, I suppose. We are actually developing ground in the rural part of the state out in Central Oregon. It's incredibly expensive. We've invested or taken loans for, let me just say that. We're deep in debt. We've taken loans for over $500,000 to try and just to make a living for my family. That seems like a lot of money. But agriculture has small margins, so it takes a lot of money to make a little bit of money. I didn't bring my kids today because they would probably tear this place apart, but they are cute.
I think so.
Anyway, I did some research, and I have some concerns. The first issue, the center that was in just discussed that there are about 80,000 plus or minus water rights in the state. One of the concerns that I'm worried about, and I think that this is an unbalanced approach, is that about 2,000 of those water rights are owned by Water Resources Department, who has no resource or income aside from me, the farmer, paying them. So they obviously will be exempt. Another 8,000 are owned by the federal government, which, as I understand, the state of Oregon cannot tax the federal government. So we've already lost 10,000 users from that 80,000, which means that the remaining 70,000 are going to be unduly burdened with the entire cost. So we're talking now about cities, industry, farms, the 70,000 water right users that are going to be burdened with the entire fee. To me, that does not seem balanced or equitable. That it is impossible to tax federal government, I'm sorry about that, but that is, I don't think, an equitable approach. We as farmers, we sell a commodity. We do not have a branding in that sense. Maybe niche farming does, but generally our product is a commodity. We do not determine the price. It is a true market economy in the farm industry, which means that the cash price of a ton of hay on October the 15th is what it goes for. I cannot do much to increase my margin. In other words, I cannot take the additional cost from this fee and pass on to my customer because I'm competing with Blaine, who also is basically producing an identical product. And so if I'm going to add to recover my cost into that hay, I'm going to have difficulty selling it. My other question is, why are exempt use wells exempt from the tax? These wells are not regulated. Nobody knows how much water is going on. While our irrigating season is relatively short, we're irrigating for about 4 months, exempt use wells are used annually all year. Nobody knows how much water is going out there. There's a huge population that's using them. So I might be stepping on toes. I don't know who the exempt use water group is. I know it does require a one-time $300 fee to provide or to file an exempt use well. However, why are they exempt from this fee? Secondly, Senate Bill 217 is perpetual and limitless. In other words, there's no, except for the general aim of further funding water resources, there's no minimum. There's no maximum put here. There is a temporary maximum, but once the bill is passed, what would keep water resources or the general fund, again, either being robbed, or what would keep the fee to going to, say, $500 per water right or $10,000 per cap? As I said, we do, as farmers, we do deal with large numbers, but our margins are quite small. So an increase in a fee or a thing, even $1,000, is a drain on our ability to support our families and be successful in our business. I think one of my main concerns is that farmers as a constituency are quite small. There's how many farmers are in the state of Oregon? I don't know. Less than 100,000, I'm pretty sure. It's easy to go to a farm. They're seen as wealthy. They're seen as producing a lot of income. However, there's no big outcry because we have more difficulty in coming and persuading the masses that it's a bad idea. Senate Bill 217 seems inefficient. why would it take $2 million to raise $12 million? I would probably volunteer to do it for $1 million. If what we're talking about is mailing out bills and collecting fees. Now, I don't want to make light of that, but it seems like that's a fairly interesting number. And just as a citizen, I'm wondering, what are the next, are we addressing the staffing issues? I can say, and I want to commend Mr. Ward. He has a great staff, actually. They work very hard, and I know that they are underfunded. I just don't agree with how this is going on. We've worked with some wonderful people over there, so I have no ill feelings there. However, on the same hand, because of the issues, statutorily, I've been trying to get water rights. There's been, I believe statutorily, we're supposed to get an initial review within 60 days of an application. And it took, in both cases where I've applied for water rights, it took up to 5 months, which makes planning extraordinarily difficult as we're under time constraints with getting loans, lining up the season with the time that funding's coming in. So it's very difficult to manage this. And so I want to say, yes, I agree that that there probably does need to be more funding to water resources, but I don't think this is a fair way to go about it. And my question is there the necessary nexus or connection between what's being taxed, excuse me, and the service provided? In other words, when I apply for a water right, there's a fee schedule that Water Resources provides. We pay that. So after that water right has been approved, what does Water Resources, what service are we getting beyond that? In other words, they approve the permit, we put the water to beneficial use, we actually are the ones that are responsible to monitor, put meters on, make sure the static levels are at sustainable levels. So I'm not sure what we, again, as the Senator was pointing out, what additional service are we getting from this fee? If it truly is a fee or if it's a tax or however you want to describe it, that I don't see that we're going to get, as a user, any additional service from this fee. Finally, I think Senate Bill 217 is expensive. Farming demographics are already dismal. I don't know if you've read, I pulled this off the US EPA website yesterday, that the average age for a farmer in this country is 57. In other words, family farms are in deep trouble with the combination of estate taxes, everything that goes on to passing a farm from generation to generation. There's no huge incentive to get into farming except that you love it. And I'm out where I live, where almost nobody wants to live because I love it, and I want my family to be able to be independent, learn how to have a skill, be good, productive citizens. I want my girls to grow up and know about life and the things that matter. This is getting more and more difficult as we go on. People are less and less interested in the source of their food, how their food's raised, what's going on with their food. And I think that this kind of thing turns young farmers away. The costs are too high. It's much easier to move to the city, get a job that guarantees a salary, guarantees a paycheck, pays your health care, whatever. We're really taking a lot of risk here, and we don't really want or need the additional fees to hinder us. As I said, farmland is extremely expensive. Production prices going up along with state taxes makes it extraordinarily difficult. I can tell you from firsthand, we're not making a lot of money. Finally, when you consider the range of fees, taxes, permits, so $100 here, $1,000, when you add all of this up, it becomes very expensive and actually prohibitive. Not only along with this bill, the area that I farm, with my new permits, we're required to put a meter on all of our wells and check the static level every day, every year, for monitoring, which is great. Fortunately, the water table is doing fantastic where we are. However, we're responsible for that cost. So not only do I have the expense now of paying the permit fee, but also I have to hire an engineer to come out and take a static reading every year. This year, just since I've started, I've only been farming 2 years there, I've already paid over $2,000 just to maintain the water right. Excuse me, that's false. I've already paid about $1,200, just to maintain the water rights that I've already applied for, I've barely used, and now I have to file more paperwork, pay more money. So my question is, what am I getting for this? Water Resources has already guaranteed and deemed that my water permit, my application is successful, beneficial, and good. But just to verify compliance that we are doing that, it costs us already $1,200. Just last year, in order to start a farm, in other words, I have to find a place to live. I have to find places for my employees to live if I can have them. Pay water resources, all of these fees come up. In the last year and a half, I've paid over $20,000. Well, not over, $19,450 in fees, permits, and taxes. This is not income tax. This is things I have to pay to local, state, federal government just for the right to farm. Nothing has been produced by that. All they are doing is verifying compliance. So granted that that needs to happen, however, I think it is an undue and a huge burden on my family. If I had another $20,000 in my pocket, it would make it that much easier to buy health insurance for my kids, whatever we need to do. Right now we're living on debt, as a matter of fact, just to make the ends meet till we can get to a place where we're actually turning in income. So excuse me.
I was just going to say, if you can wrap up, we do have...
I will. Yep. In conclusion, I just feel like it hurts my ability to provide for my family and the farm. It overburdens some water right holders and unduly favors others. It's a proverbial slippery slope. In other words, there's no limit on this fee. It could escalate. And I can't see that we're getting any additional or recognizable service provided for the tax that we would have to pay or the fee that we'd have to pay. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you for coming here today and sharing your testimony. And we'll hear from Barry, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Barry Bashu. My wife and I raise vegetables, berries, pumpkins, and nursery stock for the wholesale and retail markets east of Portland. I am honored to serve as president of the Oregon Farm Bureau Federation. I'm here today to represent them. This is a tough act to follow. As you know, agriculture is the second largest industry in the state. I hope this legislative body, not just you folks, but the body as a whole, recognizes that importance and tries to pass bills and deal with bills that enhance young farmers just like these, as opposed to making it much more difficult for them to operate in an ever-declining commodity market. I'm here today to speak in opposition to Senate Bill 217. We all recognize the importance of managing Oregon's water. Irrigators invest heavily in developing their wells and water delivery systems. There are numerous fees associated with the applications and proving up these water permits. They are expensive and lengthy, but necessary to agriculture, necessary for the development of the water, and necessary for the protection of senior water rights and the resource. Senate Bill 217 imposes fees, but in my opinion, the purpose of those fees and how they benefit the water rights holders who will pay these fees is very unclear. It appears that the money will be used to backfill the budget of Water Resources Department without any real direct link to services provided to existing water rights holders. The application of the fees is inequitable, with different individual water permit holders charged differently if they are private holders or members of irrigation districts. Further, they are based on the number of permits held, with little correlation to the volume of the various permits being sought. I am also fearful of the lien provision in the bill. The $1,000 exemption as written is arbitrary for family farming operations. Many families' fields are held in a multitude of holders, either partnerships or different LLCs mixed with leases. In these cases, the $1,000 cap would apply to each entity, and therefore a single farm may pay well over the $1,000 limit. We are reminded many times that the state of Oregon owns the water. Farm Bureau recognizes that, and that our members benefit from the prior appropriations doctrine and protection of our water permits. The legislature has systematically reduced the funding to the Water Resources Department. Water is a valuable resource that deserves sound investment from the state to manage. To make up for this lack of investment by the state on the backs of permit holders is short-sighted and inadequate. I hope that this committee opposes this bill and seeks adequate funding for the department through the budget process. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. Questions for any of this panel?
Mr. Baker, thank you for your testimony. How many permits do you have?
That's one thing I'm actually unclear about. I have two, I may have made two applications, so maybe I have two permits. However, I'm trying, I will hope, I have four wells in use and I'd like to develop another six. So I'm unclear personally what I would pay. Either, as I was calculating this out, I have the number here. We would be paying between $1,300 to $2,300 a year for compliance. So it would be when I add up the bill that we have for to pay water resources for this fee, plus our need to hire somebody to check our static levels. Those two I consider go hand in hand. I have to do both of them. Water Resources doesn't get the fee to the surveyor, but that's what I would have to pay to stay in compliance.
Thank you. Follow up?
Yeah, follow up.
Mr. Knopfziger, the same question to you. How many permits do you hold?
Also the same thing. Not really sure exactly how the fee is figured. We do have, I think we have four different certificates. But on those, if it's by certificate, it would be $400 for our farm. But if it's by anything different than that, then yeah, we'd easily hit $1,000.
Follow up. Do you have a water master in your area?
I have no idea. Never met him, seen him.
Our water is administered through Deschutes County. There's a water master out there.
Thank you.
Or Lake
Thank
County.
You. Any questions, Senator Hansel?
I do have a question, Mr. Bashu. I want to make sure I understand. You're also a grower and representing Farm Bureau, and the Farm Bureau's position is in opposition
yes.
to this bill. Okay, I want to
Chair make sure. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Hansel, that's correct.
Got it.
Okay, great. All right, that's okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Appreciate you coming here today and for your testimony. It's very, very helpful.
Thank you for your time, Madam Chair.
Okay, we have some other folks who are not in the building all the time, so I'm going to call them up first. Mr. Bill Hoyt, and then is Bill Hoyt here? No. Okay, no? Okay, then pretty much everybody else looks like signed up or folks in the building. So we'll go ahead then and start on the other sheet here. So we have Teresa Huntsinger, Kimberly Priestley, and Christy Split. Okay, whoever wants to go first.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Teresa Huntsinger. I'm the Program Director for Clean and Plentiful Water at the Oregon Environmental Council, and I'm here on behalf of Oregon Environmental Council to testify in support of Senate Bill 217. As you all know, in Oregon, water belongs to all Oregonians, and all of us pay into the general fund to help protect it. A nominal $100 fee would allow Oregonians who use this public resource to help pay for the costs of managing the resource that they benefit from. And given how critical water is to the success of an agricultural operation or a manufacturing industry, $100 per water right up to $1,000 is a minimal price to pay for such a valuable input. That one could not operate without. The Water Resources Department needs a reliable funding source now more than ever before, and the need for funding was identified in the Integrated Water Resources Strategy. Today we have more users, more competition, more complex science, and a changing water supply. The fee would benefit the water users who pay it by funding field staff and data collection that have been cut over the years. Water masters are sort of like the fire department. You help pay for them hoping that you won't need them, but you want the certainty that they will be there when you do need them. Oregon Environmental Council, we do also support increased general fund for the Water Resources Department and also for all natural resource agencies. But the reality is that all the natural resource agencies combined receive only about 1% of the state's general fund. They simply do not receive the level of funding that goes to education and social services, while, of course, we recognize that they're very important. And so we don't see any reason to believe that that reality will change anytime soon. Establishing a water rights management fee would help ensure that the department has adequate funding that it needs to perform its vital role for everyone who depends on reliable water resources. This fee proposal was developed by the Water Resources Commission initially during a public process with input from a variety of stakeholders, and then that concept was vetted further by a stakeholder group that the Water Resources Department put together, and Oregon Environmental Council participated in that process, and we would be happy to continue working with other stakeholders to ensure that the department is adequately and equitably funded. Thank you.
Thank you. Kimberly?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kimberly Priestley, and I'm here representing Water Watch of Oregon. Water Watch agrees with many of the points raised by Oregon Environmental Council and also the governor's staff and Oregon Water Resources Department. Rather than reiterate those points here, I thought I'd just take a minute to address some of the points that were made in opposition to this bill. Oh, and just to clarify, Water Watch strongly supports 217. As Teresa noted, water in Oregon belongs to the public. Currently, the state does not charge anything for the actual use of this public resource, nor for the complicated administration and enforcement of a water right once it is issued. The Water Resources Department, by statute, is bound to manage over 85,000 water rights in perpetuity. But the only fee that the Water Resources Department recovers is approximately 50% of a one-time water right application fee. After that initial fee, the department recovers nothing from the water right holder for what can be the perpetual administration of the water right and the management of that water right system. You heard from a couple commenters, you know, about fees, $7,000 to an irrigation district, fees for measuring and reporting. You know, I just want to point out that those fees are not going to the state, and so the state is not getting any benefit from those fees, yet they are still statutorily charged with managing the water rights. Again, the only fee they get is the initial application review, which has nothing to do with the management of the water right. Another couple points that were made in earlier testimony, and we've heard this before, about, I think, you know, some feel that it is inequitable that the in-stream water rights, that there's not a fee attached to the in-stream water right. Technically, the fee does attach, but, you know, from a practical matter, it would be the state paying itself, so it's really, you know, not a fee. But I think the salient point is in-stream water rights are water rights that are held by the Water Resources Department for the entire public of Oregon, as opposed to private water rights that are held for individual users for their individual use. Currently, the general, you know, the public is paying for the management of these rights through the general fund. So the public, I guess the point is that the public is in fact paying for this certain class of rights. You know, and you know, to the extent that we're talking about fairness, I think it's also worth noting that as far as these individual private rights, the public right now is carrying sort of the burden of managing these private rights for private users. You know, another point that was raised was questions about a nexus between the fee schedule and what service is being offered. You know, I think Teresa and the Water Resources Department touched on this, but just to be clear, there would be a direct, this fee would be directly tied to the funding of field, technical, and administrative activities of the department that are directly related to water rights management. The positions funded will increase field capacity, increase groundwater and surface water monitoring, and help better inform both water right holders and the public. The fee from this fund will directly benefit water right holders. So in closing, we just want to reiterate that we strongly support this bill, and we think it is a common sense bill that is needed to ensure that the Water Resources Department has the funds to carry out its management duties. Thank you.
Christy.
Thank you. Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christy Split. I'm here today representing the 44 organizations that comprise the Oregon Conservation Network. Together, we pass pro-conservation laws, protect our unique quality of life, and ensure a better Oregon for our children. Each session, The Oregon Conservation identifies shared priorities for a healthy Oregon. We're grateful to this committee for working on and supporting today another of our priorities, the Energy Efficient Appliances Bill. So thanks for that. This afternoon, though, I come to you about another of our priorities, the need to provide adequate funding for the Water Resources Department so that crucial monitoring and management work can be done. We know that we will have more people and less water in the future. We must manage this all-important resource for the common good. And that requires data, analysis, and planning for our water rights system, work that simply cannot be done given the existing resources for water, the Water Resources Department. OCN's 44 organizations represent groups that care most about a variety of issues, but many, if not all, of these issues link back to the importance of water quality and abundance. Whether a group focuses on restoring habitat for salmon head is an entirely new type of fish, or on local agriculture, water is an issue that binds our coalition together. Following nearly 2 years of conversation with various stakeholders, the Water Resources Commission suggested SB 217 is the best path forward for bringing new revenue into the Water Resources Department and improving the balance between fees and general fund in the Water Resources Department budget. Their proposal called for a $100 per right water fee with a cap of $1,000 for each individual water rights holder. You have the Dash 1 amendments. I want to clarify exactly what they do, but I also want to repeat something a couple of times just to make sure it's clear. So in the Dash 1 amendment, it makes it crystal clear that exempt groundwater wells are not included in this bill. Exempt groundwater wells were never intended to be included, and we just clarify the language to just make sure that there's no mistake about that. Also, the amendment caps the fee at $2,500 for municipalities and makes some changes to the collections of unpaid fees. So we support the bill, but we also support the work that was done in the work group and the Dash 1 amendment as a result. On behalf of our 44 organizations, I just want to thank everyone for their careful consideration today. I know well enough from my time in the Capitol, whiskey's for drinking and water's for fighting. It's never easy to have these conversations, but I'm heartened by hearing nearly universal support for the Water Resources Department and the work that they do in their budget hearing a few weeks ago. I'm heartened by the CREST agreement. I'm heartened by continued efforts to reach common ground on water storage. So here's for continuing to have conversations with an open mind. We're all in this together, and I just really appreciate your time and attention.
Thank you. Any questions?
Other questions?
Senator Hansel.
Ma'am, the one that just spoke, what was your name again? I'm sorry.
My name's Christy Split.
Ms. Split, you mentioned, I'm just want to surface something. Maybe you can help me out here or any of you there. You mentioned the common good. So that means, I would think, a much larger group of people than what was mentioned before, just the water right users.
Mm-hmm.
But the fee is only being paid by a small segment of the water users who also pay property taxes that you others have referred to that everybody pays so that everybody has that.
Right.
So it's above and beyond what the taxes that all the rest of us do. I guess the question I have is that why would this not be viewed as a tax on a small segment for the common good?
Mm-hmm.
Because the use of that fee or money that would be raised is not going back just specifically for them,
mm-hmm.
but for the common good of all that would be using water, drink water, whatever.
Right.
And what makes this not a tax as opposed to a fee?
Well, I think for me, my understanding is that the bill would go to fund the water rights program. So there's various elements of that that include, for example, specifically Director Ward mentioned that there would be increased funding for data collection, for monitoring of groundwater, and in order to properly manage those resources, we need to have to manage water, we need to have resources to do that work. So I think specifically when I look at what the Water Resources Department has suggested funding, it seems to me that it benefits water rights holders and water rights users. Now I want to be clear, when I talk about the common good and when I talk about wanting to work together on solutions, I think that the common good includes people like me and people like you and people that, you know, have farms and have water rights and people that consume local foods. It's a whole broad spectrum. It's all of us together. So, you know, I want to see solutions things that do benefit everyone. And I think it's important to note that this was what the Water Resources Commission developed as the closest they could get to that sort of model. And the policy experts on this issue are the two women sitting next to me in our coalition, so if they want to add anything, you asked me and I wanted to answer. But
I really wanted to mention common good. So, I mean,
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes.
Senator Olson.
Good answer, but I want to follow up on what Senator Hansel asked. Since we all use water, mm-hmm. why don't they just tax all of us?
Well, we do all pay into the general fund, and the general fund is,
No. Mm-hmm. We all pay into the general fund. There's no question about that. But the farmers you're asking, and the permit holders, you're asking to pay an additional fee. Mm-hmm. We all use water. We all use the same water they use. So why don't you make everybody pay? Why don't you charge everybody 50 cents a month?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, I think, for example, for municipalities, that would be the case. I live in Portland, and I have a water bill, and if this fee was put in place, the municipality would have a chunk of the fees that were paid to the Water Resources Department, and that would certainly be passed on in municipalities to water users for our use of that water. So, I'm happy to pay my share as a person who uses water in Oregon, too. I'm going to just ask if they have anything to add, because I'm here representing a coalition on multiple issues, and they might have better.
Let's see. Do you want to add anything?
Would have given the same answer.
I was just going to ask you the same question, because the point being that Portland, Salem use a ton more water than the farmers use. Mm-hmm. So why don't they have a little piece of this, a little dog in this fight, and start paying into it? The municipality pays $2,500. They will take more water from Salem than most of these farmers will use all year long. So why don't you make the people in Salem and Portland and Canby, where I live, pay more so that we can spread the pain out instead of penalizing the farmers? Mm-hmm. You heard, they work on tight margins.
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, that is actually a question that was discussed in the work group, and really trying to address this question of equity. Is it more fair to pay based on the amount of water you use, based on the amount of the number of people who live in your city? And what people thought was the most equitable was the solution is to pay based on the number of water rights you have. If you were to pay based on, say, the volume of your water right, that would actually mean that there would be many agricultural users that would pay much more than the municipalities. The amount of water, surprisingly, that cities use is actually quite small compared to the amount of water that is used for irrigation. But I do think that obviously, if you're looking at something like the city of Salem or the city of Portland, they have an easier capacity to pay that fee because of the number of people who are using that water. And that's why that cap was set higher for municipalities than for other water rights.
Okay, I'm sorry. Senator Hansel had a follow-up, and I didn't realize that.
I apologize.
Yeah. I just want to ask each one of you, if we were able to find money other than this fee to support them from the general fund or some other source, would you be supportive of that? Water Resources.
Speaking for Water Watch, our goal is to stabilize funding for the Water Resources Department. So if that funding could come from another source, yes, we would support that. But history has shown that the Water Resources Department budget has been declining for over a decade. And, this, again, as my colleagues have pointed out, this is the solution that the Water Resources Commission, after 2 years of pretty intense deliberations, found to be the most successful path forward, because counting on a significant increase in general fund does not seem like a likely outcome.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. We're going to keep moving, because I promised my committee members we would not go over tonight after last night. So we're going to keep moving and invite up the next group of speakers. I have Blake Rowe, Richard Kosasan, and Roger Beyer. I saw Roger walk out, so is he... Roger, are you hiding back there? Okay, well, we'll call somebody else up in the meantime. Keith Hance. Keith?
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Blake Rowe. I'm the CEO for the Oregon Wheat Growers League, and I'm here to add my voice in opposition to SB 217. I'm not going to try to restate what you already heard, very well put by some farmers, as to the reasons that this bill doesn't work. I can't say it any better, so it may not be good form, but I'll say ditto to the comments that you heard from the farmers that came to testify to you. So maybe, and this is really not intended to be flip, but I've served on many task forces, and they have very useful roles. But sometimes it's easy to agree on a task force when the fee falls on someone else. And I think what you are hearing somewhat from the farmers who hold water rights is they don't see the service that is connected to the fee they're being asked to pay. And I don't think they're in a position to pass this fee on in the nature of the commodity businesses that they are in, which is sort of a double hit. It's one thing to ask them to bear more cost, but to ask them to bear more cost in an industry where they are very limited in their ability to pass their costs into their product is an extra complication. So I think what you're hearing is the task force may have agreed, but the proud recipients of the fee don't see the connection to what they're being asked to pay for. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
Welcome. Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity. For the record, my name is Keith Nance. I'm general manager and partner in Dillon Land and Cattle Company in Maupin, Oregon. Also a very active member of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. For the record, I am opposed to Senate Bill 217. Senate Bill 217 imposes an annual management fee of $100 per water right. As stated in this bill, Section 2, Subsection 2, this will impose a management fee of $1,000 upon my operation alone. I currently hold 12 water rights, primary and supplemental. This is also in addition to almost $5,000 annually that I pay to my irrigation district for management fees and maintenance fees on my district in Maupin. My operation is also very active in multiple local watershed councils, and as I believe, those watershed councils are funded through general fund dollars through OWEB. We are very active in those local watershed councils to help manage our water rights and to help us in a concerted effort to conserve waters of the state and to make efficiency upgrades. I'm 33 years old. I have had a dream of owning my own farming and operating my own farm and ranch since I was very young. Today, the median age of U.S. farmers and ranchers is 57.1 years old, according to the 2007 census. Also, according to that same census, the fastest growing age demographic in the United States in production agriculture is 65 years and older. The fastest shrinking age demographic, according to that census, is 45 years old and younger. We're losing young people day in and day out in production agriculture. Yet, we have a growing population. Certain statistics out there say that in 50 years we'll have double the population in this world that we have today, with less and less producers to produce that food. As we move forward, each imposition of fees or imposed fees upon us makes our life more and more difficult to produce more and more food and hold young people opposed to coming into production agriculture every single day. It's a huge challenge we're faced with, and for these reasons, I'm directly opposed to Senate Bill 217. Thank you.
Thank you for coming here today, sharing your testimony. Richard?
Madam Chair, thank you. Richard Costa, Sandwater for Life, and I wish I was 33 years old. Passed that a couple years ago. We would appear in opposition to Senate Bill 217. Probably my oversight, but I had not seen the amendments until today. As written, we believed, I think references by Senator Hansel represented more of a tax than a fee, in the sense that the dollars raised would have gone to the Water Resources Department operating fund. And a fee there is a direct nexus between he who pays or she who pays and the benefit derived. For that reason, we would classify it as a tax. Second of all, as written or as initially drafted, Senate Bill 217, I would suggest, would extend the fee to an exempt groundwater use. The language contained in Section 2 would state that the fee would be imposed on each primary or supplemental right held for waters of the state, including but not limited to water rights held under a permit or a certificate. And if one were to look at provisions found in 537-545, a groundwater use for a purpose that is exempt under subsection 1 of this section to the extent that the use is beneficial constitutes a right to appropriate groundwater equal to that established by a groundwater right certificate issued under 537-700. We would also bring the attention of the committee to the provisions as originally drafted. In the event that the fee was not paid by a water right holder, the fee would the obligation would become a lien on the property, representing a tax once again. Getting back to the need for funding of the department, I think that is been demonstrated that there is a need in the future. But if we were to look at the fees that individuals throughout the state are expected to pay, the fee revenue to the department from 2001, 2003 has increased over 75%, while at the same time, the general fund to the department has increased or decreased by about 10%. So we have basically an inherent disconnect. And if one were to look at the magnitude of the fee increases across the board incorporated into Senate Bill 788 in 2009, those represented fairly dramatic increases. One of the problems that we face today is that the fee increases incorporated into 788 in 2009, both on the exempt wells as well as the fees across the board, the department has only been able to generate approximately 66% of that revenue. With that, I think it should be noted that we did participate in some work group discussions and there was not unanimous agreement. I would echo Senator Olson's comments. If this is for the department, and this is truly for the betterment of water management throughout this state in the future, 5 and 10 and 15 years down the road, I would suggest that everyone gets to play. And if you took the number of households in the state, slightly over 1.5 million, you imposed a 50-cent a month charge, you would generate over $9 million a year. If you took the 911 tax, 75 cents a month, you would generate slightly over $13 million a year. To me, today and in the future, that's more equitable. With that, Madam Chair, thank you. And if I can answer any questions, I'd be happy to do so.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. Any questions for any of these panelists? All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for coming here today, Mr. Coates. We have, I'm going to call the last four people up together, so you're going to have to get cozy up here so we can move along. Jim Walsh, Tom Wolf, Tracy Rutten, and Jeff Stone, and I will be right back. My vice chair will knock them too hard.
Knock them too hard, we're going to close this bad boy. What do you think? It's Miller time. Mr. Wolf.
Vice Chair Olson, committee members. For the record, my name is Tom Wolf, Chair of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited. It's always sad when there's a few committee members not here because I have a pretty good story to tell and I always like to have a bigger audience for that story. But in 2010, the bus project in Portland asked me to address a special school they were having for outstanding grad and college students from across the nation to talk about watershed issues. And I was asked to come in and talk on any subject I could choose, and I chose how do we fund agencies, much to the chagrin of the bus project, who haven't asked me to come back since. But anyway, and I got these 25 extremely bright students who had a GPA altogether probably of about 3.98 to look at ways that they could fund agencies. We set the parameters with the idea that there would be no general fund money because whoever the legislators were would not look at us. We would depend on creative fee ideas to come up with funding. And interestingly enough, one of the ideas they presented was charging for water rights, but they came up with a lot of other ideas, and it brings me to an issue. I've been working on water in natural resource agencies for 20 years, starting with ODFW, then Department of Forestry, now Water Resources, and a bunch of others. And one of the biggest issues we face is how do we fund those agencies? And to be honest, even though there's only 1% of general fund that goes into their budgets, I don't see that changing in the near future. You know, in fact, the Ways and Means Natural Resources Subcommittee has been asked to cut $2.5 to $4 million from the Natural Resource Agency. So we are not going to arrive at creating funding for those agencies by increasing general fund money unless the legislators take a hard look at what they're doing and make that decision. So we need to look at fees. Currently, the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife is going to be raising the fishing and hunting license fees in 2 years. The last time they raised it by 30%. They'll probably do that again to cover many of their costs. The Department of Forestry is looking at charging a forest pass that would charge you if you hike or camp or whatever in the state forests. Fees are being looked at. Now, did my heart break when the farmers that traveled here from Eastern Oregon talked about their expenses? I was born in Enterprise, Oregon. Of course my heart broke. I lived in Eastern Oregon a lot of my life following my I want to be in a bigger school football coach father across the state. And eventually we ended up in Portland because where the biggest schools were. But I lived in Enterprise, Hood River, Pilot Rock, Seaside, Astoria, all over the state. And I understand the needs of farmers. I have cousins that are farmers in the Mountaindale area, and I understand their needs. So this is a hard decision, but a lot of stakeholders were called to the table to come up with the best idea. The best idea turned out to be this fee idea. And true, many people aren't going to like it, and true, it's going to be hard. But I'm open to other ideas, and I'm sure other people are too, but let's actually do something that brings other ideas. Let's look at things that brings, because I know the Water Resource Department. They do some amazing things dealing with a commodity that's very, very scarce in our state, and will be scarcer as climate change continues to happen. Is water in-stream flow for fish, water for farmers, water for people to drink, water for people to run their businesses? So this may not be the best solution. This might not be a decision that everybody likes, but I think this water fee that they're going to charge on water rights is a good decision. It should be followed, it should be accepted, and it should be passed out of this committee. And I ask for your support. Thank you.
Okay, Tracy?
Madam Chair, she asked me to go first.
Okay, and I'm just looking at the clock, so we are ending at 5 today, and so just give you guys a...
I'll be mercifully brief, Madam Chair. I am Jeff Stone. I'm the Executive Director for the Oregon Association of Nurseries. As part of this work group, the things stated so far about it not being uniform is absolutely true. The governor appeared before my nursery and greenhouse industry and asked our help. The fact is that we need to look at ways to fully fund the Water Resources Department. My point to you this today is that, while I think we should have a vigorous discussion about this type of issue, this bill is not ready for prime time. And I would respectfully ask this committee to ask for a work group to be established. We will roll up our sleeves. We will work on this bill to try to find additional ways that we can really look at how do we fund the Water Resources Department. The nursery industry really cared deeply about how do you reinvest the dollars? How is the fund crafted and constructed? To our satisfaction, we're not there yet. So I would like for that ability to come back to you with something that is fully crafted, that can involve a lot of different people and come to you and give you a success story. But Senate Bill 217 is not ready yet. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Jim, so you haven't had a chance. Sorry, I had to sneak out for a minute.
Chair Dingfelder and committee
members.
I
want to make sure you're not double dipping. That's all.
Jim Welsh, representing Oregon Cattlemen's Association, and we certainly appreciate the conversations and the opportunity in the work group, certainly with the Water Commission and the Department. And we have some concerns definitely with this bill and do not support Senate Bill 217. We agree with Water for Life that this is probably should be considered as a tax. And we realize that also that it is not clear how multiple owners are dealt with and LLCs in this. So we would and always have supported a closer to a 60% general fund funding of Water Resources Department and 40% fees. And we provided testimony on House Bill 2259, which is increasing, are proposing to increase fees again. And certainly we don't want to move. I know there's been a discussion and some agreements that it should be 50-50, but we want to, we think it should be 60-40. And so if this is truly a fee, we have to consider that between 2001 and this present biennium, that the fees have increased for the department somewhere around 74%. And so that's a pretty big chunk. And we would prefer that it would become, because it's a public benefit, it would come from general fund. And let's keep a balance that we can all agree upon. And we certainly agree with the nursery department, 217 is not in any way prepared or ready for prime time. In fact, we really don't want it to be on the back of mostly ranchers and farmers. Thank you,
Jim. Tracy, you get...
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tracy Button with the League of Oregon Cities. I want to thank the department and the stakeholders for their effort and work in discussing this issue. LOC and both LOC and SDAO were part of the work group process representing municipal water providers. We do recognize the need for additional and stable funding for the department, but we want to ensure that there is an equitable solution that is found. And we want to remind you that municipal water use in the state accounts for 6-7% of the water use. And so when we saw the original bill as drafted, that came out that excluded municipalities from the cap that was allowed for agricultural uses. That was a concern for our folks, especially our smaller jurisdictions, who cannot pass that on to their ratepayers. Many of our municipalities have charter amendments where they do require voter approval to pass on any increases in rates to their citizens. So it is a concern for our smaller municipalities, and we would be happy to do any additional work as suggested on this issue going forward. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you for your patience. We're going to have two more people up very quickly. We're going to be running out of time here, so.
What good does it do to have a hearing if you can't ask questions?
Well, if it could be quick, because we have a whole nother bill to hear.
Mr. Welsh, you had said that it's important to fund water resources appropriately. I'm looking at their governor's recommended budget for this year. It's $25 million. Last biennium it was $20 million. That's a 22% increase. Is that increase not adequate enough to fund them? They're going from 144 FTEs to 159.
22%. I know you'll be brief in your answer.
I just I think that's an answer better that the agency is better qualified than I am, but all I've got to say is that if we want to adequately meet the needs of fish, people, and farming in this state, we need to better adequately and fund that agency and increase the amount of people. So I support their increase in funding.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I can ask the department if you can follow up on that as well. Appreciate it in writing. So Roger and Peggy, and I know you guys are going to be very brief. So we have a whole nother bill to hear.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Roger Beyer. I'm here representing the Oregon Seed Council, the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and the Oregon Blueberry Commission, all of which are opposed to this bill and this fee on water rights. Our people are price takers, not price setters. We have no ability to pass fees on as they get passed on to us. I will be very brief, as I have an appointment starting right now upstairs in another office, so I'd have to answer any questions. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You could breathe also. Thank you.
Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. Our testimony in support of Senate Bill 217 is on the record. What I want to make sure that you also notice is that on OLIS is the August report from the Water Resources Commission's subcommittee that arrived at this decision. And I want to make sure that some of the statistics are on the record. Agriculture and food processing contribute $25.8 billion to Oregon's economy, and 85% of the diverted water in Oregon is for irrigated agriculture. Municipal water accounts for about 6% of Oregon's diverted water use and delivers drinking water to about 88% of Oregon's population. So I think those are two really important statistics that helped, I think, arrive at the decision that the water rights fee was a reasonable, equitable, not comfortable, and wasn't an easy decision, but it seemed as if the best idea that we could come up with, and it is to make sure that water rights are managed. Senator Hansel's district with the limited groundwater issue, that's a nexus to this water rights fee. We have to make sure that doesn't happen elsewhere in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Anybody else? Last chance? Want to come up on this? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 217, and I will ask the Water Resources Department to follow up on Senator Olson's question in writing, please. Thank you. Or in person. I'm going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 846, and actually, since this is Senator Hansel's bill, I'm going to ask if you wanted to say a few things from the dais. You can say it from up here.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder. Yes, I will. There's been some question as to what was my intent and why I worked on submitting this particular bill. The reason I did was that in Umatilla County, all last year, under the leadership of the co-conveners, my at that time fellow colleague Dennis Doherty, County Commissioner, and Richard Whitman with the state governor's office, convened a governor's solution team project. It was, I thought, an absolute marvelous journey through this issue that they met. We had a collaboration of environmental groups, counties, producers, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. It was called CRUST, for an acronym for Columbia River Umatilla something something
solutions team.
There you go. And as a result of that, they came to agreement. There are still some projects to work on, but there were several items that everybody agreed to. And Senator Dingfelder and I had the privilege of attending a signing ceremony in Portland a couple months ago, where they all agreed to these particular points. So I felt that as, you know, I was a part of it as a local official, now I have the privilege of serving in the state Senate, that if we could take those items and put them together in some type of legislation to move this effort forward, that it would be a good thing to do.
So working with Richard, we had several meetings, but particularly with the other co-chair, co-convener, Dennis Doherty, and staff that worked on this project, J.R. Cook, we drafted and put together this particular bill. The reason that we didn't include it in someone else's bill is that we felt that the project was kind of unique, kind of different, and we didn't want to get it lost in the shuffle with a bigger bill or a separate bill that may or may not have the kind of support that we felt that we had on the local level. That is the purpose for it. It's moving forward, following up on a very collaborative effort that took place for well over a year from the governor's, and we appreciate very much the governor's willingness to do that. So to the best of my ability and the ones that were helping me with it, this Senate bill reflects what we believe were some of the things. Certainly open for amendments, certainly open if we have missed something or we needed to make it clear, but that's the purpose, and that's basically what I have to say.
Great. Thank you, Senator Hansel, for that introduction. We do have Dennis Doherty, who wanted to... Did you want to come up, Richard, as the co-convener? Okay. So why don't we have Dennis, he's the Umatilla County Chair, and Richard Whitman, the co-conveners, and then we'll call up the other folks who signed up. Yep. Come on up. Dennis, good to see you again. Just saw you on
Friday.
Been
a long time, Senator.
Yeah.
Since Friday night.
Yeah.
I guess we've agreed I'll go first, if that's okay. Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Dennis Doherty, Umatilla County Commissioner for approximately six more weeks. I am here to... give you some perspective. For one thing, I understand that there is a little bit of question also starting to develop a drumbeat. Well, why the Umatilla Basin? Because we've been down here many times in the last several sessions. So what we're talking about today with Senate Bill 846 in my mind is kind of like a whistle stop on a train journey that started back in the 1970s when the critical groundwater areas were declared in Umatilla and Morrill counties. And I think most of you have heard the story of all of the things that have happened since then, including some studies that were done, some major studies that were done, but were never implemented and are still sitting on shelves somewhere. So I find that and when we get into 2013, we have made a number of whistle stops. And the last one, of course, is the Columbia River Umatilla Solutions Team Cooperative Agreement that was signed in February of this year. That agreement identified nine recommendations that the group had arrived at consensus on. And what I think Senate Bill 846 represents is a good faith effort initiated by Representative Jensen from our county and Senator Hansel from our county, a good faith effort to give legs and give life to those recommendations and to assure that they don't go on a shelf like previous studies did. The I think I could note that the process is something that was a gift to us, and we're very appreciative of it. The Oregon Solutions process worked very well in this case. I think I could note that there is a kind of a complementary nature between this and the portion of the new Integrated Water Resources Strategy that calls for place-based planning. I could note that the Columbia River is sort of place-based because it runs alongside some counties and certainly doesn't touch other counties. I want you to know that our effort in that basin, which is now which is now really starting to mature, has always been to lift all boats. It's not just about farmers or irrigation or agriculture. We respect in-stream needs. We respect ecological needs. We respect multiple users. We like to see everybody benefit. This particular bill, though, doesn't address all of those things. Don't think that that means that we don't care about those other things, because we do. So we have planned and talked and taken this train for 43 years now, and we have been patient, and we're certainly happy to keep planning and keep talking, but we hope that we can do some implementation too. We believe that Senate Bill 846 is a good start. The 846-2 amendments that I saw just before the hearing opened, they would be fine too. What wouldn't be fine is to not implement the consensus recommendations from the CREST process. I'm representing the Board of Commissioners in Umatilla County today and making these comments, but I'm also here to tell you that the Association of Oregon Counties, without a dissenting vote, supports this bill, and I think there are reasons for it, and include some of these things that I'm commenting on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Richard.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, Richard Whitman, Governor's Natural Resource Advisor. I'm really pleased to be here today with my co-convener, Commissioner Doherty. He put in countless volunteer hours on this work, on the CREST collaborative effort. This is a really significant accomplishment in the state in terms of advancing projects and recommendations that really do lift all boats in this part of the state of Oregon. They lift the boat of irrigated agriculture, lifts the boat of our fisheries, lifts the boat of our local interest as well. So the governor, Governor Kitzhaber, is absolutely committed to implementation of the CREST recommendation and supports Senator Ansel's effort to assure that that occurs through legislative blessing of the CREST recommendations. Like Commissioner Doherty, I want to recognize that the current introduced version of Senate Bill 846 doesn't quite do the job of recognizing all the interests, and I think some amendments to the bill are needed. But conceptually, we're very supportive of Senator Hansel's effort to move this forward, and appreciate his leadership in doing that. With that, I'll conclude my testimony. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? No. Did you want to make one more point?
With your indulgence, Chair Dingfelder, if I could, there is one thing I forgot to say that I do want to put on the record. I know we've received some testimony, I believe, from the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Reservation concerned about the interplay between some of the CREST recommendations and tribal water right settlement negotiations that are going on right now. And this is something that we addressed repeatedly during the CREST process. I just want to go on record that both for this bill and for the bill you're going to hear tomorrow, we are absolutely committed to assuring that the CREST recommendations and other water legislation that we're working on does not interfere with that process. And with that, Chair Dingfelder, I'll conclude my testimony.
I do have a question for either of you, and I've sort of heard this from Dennis about not sitting on a shelf, but do you need legislation, enabling legislation, to implement any of the recommendations that were in the CREST? It wasn't clear to me from your testimony.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, the answer to that is actually yes. There is some need for legislation to implement the CREST recommendations, and you will have before you tomorrow Senate Bill 839, which includes a section in it which is important for really the next phase of work on the Umatilla Project, Aquifer Storage and Recharge Project. That is language that's been worked out between CREST members for the next phase of that work. There are also really long-term is some need for some additional authority for the Water Resources Department in terms of implementing some of the specific recommendations coming out of CREST. And so some additional legislation is needed to make sure that those recommendations are implemented. And then finally, Chair Dingfelder, of course, there's the need for money. And approximately $10 million in the governor's recommended budget has been set aside for implementation of those recommendations. And that's a process that you and other members of the Natural Resources Subcommittee will be working through in Ways and Means.
Okay. And just to follow up, and I realize the dash twos, these are not your amendments, correct? Because there is in here, and you said you were fine with the dash twos that I heard, there's a one FTE. Is that, and I should know this because we heard the budget already for the Water Resources Department. Is this position in their budget?
Chair Dingfelder, it is in the governor's recommended budget, and it is necessary to implement the recommendations of CREST as well.
But that is this right here, the dash twos, necessary to get that, or is that already in a policy option package for the department? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Chair Dingfelder, it is in a policy option package.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Gorey, thank you for coming. Thank you for your service in your county. When you testified, were you testifying to the dash two, or were you testifying to 846 itself?
I was not. Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I was not testifying to them. I was just acknowledging that I've seen them just shortly before the hearing started. I've read them, and they propose to make some changes that I think would be welcomed by some of the people who were part of our CREST work group.
And you are aware, I just want to make this clear for the record, you are aware that it is a gut stuff. Takes out.
Means it's complete replacement
complete
of the original
replacement of the original
language.
Bill.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank
Great.
You.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to call up Teresa Hunsinger, Kimberly Priestley, and Tom Wolf. We're seeing the water theme here, so we're hearing from some of the consistent voices. Okay. Let's get going. Kimberly, why don't you go first, please?
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Kimberly Priestley, representing Water Watch of Oregon. First, I wanted to say that I really appreciate Senator Hansel's and Dennis Doherty's explanation of the intent. That is very helpful for us to hear. That said, what we are testifying on today is the actual language of the bill, but I did want to say we appreciated hearing that. In the interest of time, I'll leave the history of the CREST to my written testimony and others. But I did want to reiterate that earlier this session, we did note to this committee that from Water Watch's perspective, one of the biggest successes of the CREST was that the agreements reached were consistent with fish protection laws, most notably the sensitive stock rules that limit new live flow diversions from October 1 through April 14th. From our perspective, Senate Bill 846 directly undercuts not only the CREST, but existing fish protection laws that the CREST sought to protect. And again, I'm speaking to the written language, not the intent. In my written testimony, I outlined 10 key provisions of the CREST that we feel this bill undercuts. I won't go through all of those now for the sake of time, but I did want to reiterate a few key points. First, Senate Bill 846 is at odds with the fish protection measures of CREST and the sensitive stock rules. The CREST dictates that water development projects must not negatively impact in-stream flows needed for fish. Senate Bill 846, on the other hand, requires development of a storage program that will maximize agricultural development while only considering the in-stream flow needs of fish. It also directs a work group to develop water targets, in other words, water to be diverted for agriculture, while giving only due consideration to environmental impacts. These standards are not the same as those agreed by the CREST, and importantly, they have very, very different legal meanings. Merely considering the in-stream flows of fish and/or environmental impacts greatly dilutes the directive of the CREST and state and federal fish protection laws, which require much stronger protections. Second, Senate Bill 846 actually creates a means to undermine existing fish protection laws. Senate Bill, it does this in this way. Senate Bill 846 I described this also in detail in my written testimony.
I was going to say, we have your written testimony, so can you maybe speed just it up. Summarize?
Yeah, okay. Thanks. Okay.
Yeah, it's on the list.
I'll just give you the headings. We also think, so it sets a work group that is specifically tasked with an action that could lead to the undermining of the Division 33 rules. Third, the storage project is not consistent with the sideboards instituted by CREST, and there are probably 5 subpoints under that which are outlined in detail in our written testimony. Fourth, and this is a pretty important one, Senate Bill 846 conflicts directly with the CREST directives on governance. The CREST calls for a path forward. It calls on the Governor's Natural Resource Office to convene a work group over the interim to detail the appropriate structure and elements of a statewide Oregon Water Resources Department program of new water storage, conservation, utilization, and in-stream flow protections and augmentations. Senate Bill 846, on the other hand, divests the leadership from the Natural Resources Office, doesn't put the program within the Water Resources Department, and limits its focus on storage. Again, this is inconsistent with the agreement. And I just wanted to take 1 minute to stress the importance of having the program under the Water Resources Department. The CREST agreement was specifically geared at trying to curb recent efforts to divest the Water Resources Department of its authority to manage water resources in the Umatilla Basin specifically. Hours and hours and hours of negotiation went into this key point. I just wanted to highlight that for the committee. So in conclusion, we urge the committee to reject the bill as written, because as I said, it's inconsistent with the CREST and key protection laws. You know, I did want to reiterate that Water Watch is a signatory to the CREST, and we and other conservation groups very much support the work that is outlined in the CREST. I wanted the committee to be clear on that. To that end, we did draft some amendments, the -2 amendments, that we feel do capture the agreement of the CREST. There are...
Kimberly, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Okay, I just want to note a couple changes to the -2 amendments that are in direct response to basin interests. And so on the -2 amendments, some changes in the works are on page 1, line 7, Umatilla Basin is going to be brought into northeastern Oregon. On page 1, line 14, Columbia River is going to be deleted so that it's all waters of northeastern Oregon, which will give people more options. Same concept on page 2, line 16, delete Columbia River.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you. And we have your written testimony, Teresa, which I know you're not going to read, and maybe if you have anything to add.
Yes, I will be brief. So thank you, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Teresa Huntsinger. I am the Program Director for Clean and Plentiful Water at the Oregon Environmental Council. My written testimony is pertaining to the original draft of Senate Bill 846. I have seen the -2 amendments, and we would be supportive of the -2 amendments. So our concern with the original draft of the bill is that...
we have your written testimony.
Yes. Is that it's contrary to the original terms of the CREST agreement. And there are other ways to make sure that we are moving forward on the CREST, which we are very supportive of. I want to be clear about that. So other ways to move forward with that, as have been discussed, is that there is a staff person in the governor's recommended budget in the Water Resources Department to work on implementing the CREST recommendations. In addition, we've been very involved in working on Senate Bill 839. That bill calls for establishing the statewide work group to look at questions about water supply funding projects, as is actually called for as governance moving forward in the CREST agreement. And then in addition, we worked very closely to develop some language in Senate Bill 839 that addresses provisions for moving forward the Umatilla Aquifer Recharge Project that was originally funded on 3369. So if there is a need to have a bill to move forward to implement the CREST, we just want to make sure that that is actually consistent with the language in the CREST agreement that is more balanced in terms of different uses and in-stream needs as well as out-of-stream needs, whereas this Senate Bill 846 as originally drafted is not.
Tom?
Chair Dingfelder, committee members, I was here till 7 o'clock last night, so you're starting to spin a little bit, so I'll be very, very
brief.
Yeah,
well, don't forget we were here
with
you.
Yeah, I know, as were you. So, anyway, Tron Limited supported the CREST agreement. I support the testimony of my two beautiful colleagues to my right. They've said it much better than I could. And we support the Dash 2 amendments that were presented by Kimberly. And I'm done.
Great, thank you. Any quick questions for these folks? Okay, thank you very much. And Mike Sullivan and David Pills, and then we're going to call J.R. Cook. Anybody else that wants to come up to the dais to or to the witness stand to testify? Oh, and Bill. Okay. Go ahead, David.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is David Pills. I'm here on behalf of the Freshwater Trust. We were honored to serve on the Governor's Columbia River Umatilla Solutions Task Force. We've been working actively with landowners and others in the basin for over a decade on cooperative water management and in-stream flow restoration projects. The CREST Declaration of Cooperation spoke of ensuring appropriate follow-up and implementation of CREST strategies, the need for institutional staffing capacity, for recommended Columbia River planning, water conservation, in-stream and out-of-stream water development, etc. I won't go through it all.
We've had a presentation
yes.
on the CREST, so we know.
To the extent that Senate Bill 846 or the amendments, the proposed amendments, echo these CREST recommendations, the Freshwater Trust is supportive of the bill. We're supportive of Senator Hansel's effort on this. We are looking forward to working with the basin and others to implement and build on the CREST recommendations, however this bill shakes out. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Gentlemen, whoever wants to go first.
Madam Chair, Dingfelder, Chair, committee for the record, Bill Cluing, Carpenters and Joiners. Be real brief, Senate Bill 846, when I first looked at it, if you look at page 1, lines 14 through 28.
Sorry about that.
And then lines 1 through 3 on page 2. When I seen this, I see nothing but a bright future for those counties involved. As we go through step by step, I see those counties being able to become the economic drivers of Central Oregon. I've been working on bill jobs issues for years in here, and this could be the biggest job creator the state of Oregon has put on the table in years. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and the committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the political director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers. I concur with Bill Cluding. AWPPW supports 846 because it's time is due for Oregon to draw some water out of the Columbia River. Why would AWPPW be interested? There's no paper mills in that area. This is a futures bill for us. We look at the day when hemp will be grown in eastern Oregon, and we will be able to organize industrial workers. China right now has paying record prices for scrap paper. All our mills are recycled paper mill friendly, and this will give us another avenue for production of paper. And I thank you for your time. I'll answer any questions that there be.
Thank you, gentlemen. Any questions? Okay, I think we have our last person to testify. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your testimony. J.R. Cook from Umatilla Basin was ill today and couldn't make it, so we are going to give him a call, and he wanted to call in and add his testimony. Anybody else like to testify on this?
Hi, J.R. Okay. This is Beth Riley, and you're about to testify in front of the Senate Environment Committee.
Hi, J.R. This is Senator Dingfelder here with the Senate Environment Committee, and you are the last person to testify on this on the bill, Senate Bill 846. So you are on speaker. Hope you're feeling better.
I apologize, but for the sake of everybody's health, I stay away from you today. So thanks for letting me call in. I appreciate it.
And we have about 5 minutes or so, JR. So just want to let you know we had. Have you been listening?
I have been listening.
Okay, great.
Chair Dingfelder, and I'll be brief. So, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, actually this time I'm calling in on behalf of an incorporated of the Northeast Oregon Water Association, which is actually a 501c6 entity we're forming to, as a basin, to assist and engage in the CREST efforts and other efforts to develop the CREST projects to hopefully to fruition. And so I just want to touch on a couple of facts really quick, or a couple of key points, just to reiterate that I think Commissioner Doherty did a very good job of. And the first one is that I think Senator Hansel has recognized in this first session attempted to put a bill forth that fills a key void, and really a void that's been identified since 1985 with the first hematoma basin task force that was appointed by executive order from Governor Victor Attea. And that's that we need a work group, and we need institutional capacity to move our efforts forward. And I really appreciate his leadership and assisting in drafting this bill to make that point clear, that without capacity, that we don't really get it to the big picture that these plans create. If we don't just go from a water right perspective, when you grab a big chunk of water and develop it out, if we're going to look at the big picture, which has multiple moving pieces, we need the capacity to ensure that vision, to implement and protect that big picture. And that's a big key point, and I appreciate that. The second piece that I actually assisted Senator Hansel in, I thought was part of the compliance and the consistency with the CREST, is this precedent issue that there is a big difference between development of Columbia River supplies and development of tributary water supplies. And a quick example I'll give you is things that we're going to be grappling with as we work in these work groups is the conserved water projects that we've done in our basin. And there's a big difference between the conserved water project that results in 5 cubic feet per second, which is basically 5 basketballs per second going by you of additional stream flow. That may be very beneficial to a small stream, but what we found is we've actually resulted, our project have resulted in 20 cubic feet per second of new stream flow in the Columbia River, and that's not even measurable. So there's some key differences between management of water projects in the Columbia main stem and the tributaries. And I want to reiterate that our basin has always believed that we can go to the Columbia River, fix our problems, and use that fix as a way to go upstream and help benefit stream flows in the tributaries, where we actually believe we can do some good for fish. We're committed to that, and we're willing to amend 846 to memorialize that to make it work for all of us. Lastly, I just want to reiterate that we appreciate Senator Hansel's efforts to keep Senate Bill 846 consistent with the CREST Declaration of Cooperation. We understand there's a few issues and concerns with some of the wording currently included, and that we're willing to make the necessary changes to keep the consistency and the focus on implementation of the CREST. Last, I just want to reiterate that I would have been there in person. I believe that all of these efforts, 839, 846, there's a lot of people in this basin that are excited of what's to come. This is light on the horizon that we haven't seen, like Commissioner Doherty said, in 40 years. And any way we can move this effort forward and keep the ball rolling is a small step in the right direction, in our opinion. We appreciate the work of this committee, the governor's office, and the CREST, and making sure that we get somewhere this time. So thank you. I'll take any questions if you can
stand
my voice.
Great. Thank you, JR. I did have a question for you. Did you get a chance, because we did post it on the legislative information system, to take a look at the Dash 2 amendments?
I did take a look at them, and if possible, I'd like to reserve the chance to make comments. I also provided a few recommended amendments to Senator Hansel and some of the stakeholder groups today. It's okay with you, Senator Dingfelder, I'd like to take a look before commenting.
Okay, that would be helpful, though, if you can follow up in an email to Beth.
I'll do that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for JR before we let him go back to hopefully taking a nap? All right. Thank you very much, JR. Senator Hansel, did you want to say anything? Or okay. Thank you, JR. Hope you feel better. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, thanks for your time. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So with that, we don't have anybody else that would like to testify on Senate Bill 846. Going. We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 846. And Beth, anything else for today? Do we need to carry over any work sessions?
Yes, Madam Chair, you would need to carry over all three work sessions today.
So just so tomorrow is our last hearing for Senate bills, so we're just carry the roll over the bills from today, Senate Bill 217, Senate Bill 846, and Senate Bill 839. And with that, we will resume in our regular room tomorrow at a regular time at 3 o'clock, and we are adjourned.